Certainly, as Jeff said in his prayer, there's so many in the world who's in trouble in their marriages. And you know, it's interesting that people oftentimes, it's not true every time, will ignore what God's Word teaches about how to treat a mate, how to build a marriage. But when it comes time where one of the mates decides it's time to divorce or leave the other mate, now they're very interested in somebody telling that mate they can't divorce them, or they can't divorce them except for adultery. All of a sudden, they're very interested in God's laws. It's to their advantage. That's sad, isn't it? And so we don't want to get in that shape. And as we said earlier class, the way to do that is to cultivate our relationships now. And if we have friends or family, to encourage them to do the same. So hopefully this study, if nothing else, will strengthen our resolve to teach what God's Word says about the role of a husband and a wife, that marriage might be what God intended. God intended for people to enjoy it, and it can be enjoyed if God's will is followed in it. What happens in a relationship if one person is a Christian and one person is not? What's the potential?
They have different values and goals.
They have different values and goals. Does that spell trouble?
Yes, it can.
Is it trouble that can always be reconciled?
If the one that's not a Christian becomes a Christian,
that would certainly help. What if they don't? What if they say, I'm tired of this marriage. I'm tired of you going to church. I'm tired of you preaching to me. I'm tired of not doing things that we like to do. I'm leaving. And they leave. Doesn't Paul give the privilege to the Christian mate to remarry?
No.
I hear a no.
Unless there's adultery or fornication.
Those who believe that Paul does give that privilege, where do they turn? What? 1 Corinthians 7:15. What is that sometimes called? We talked about that in a previous class.
Pauline.
The Pauline privilege. Let's look at it. That's where we're at in our study tonight. There's nothing new, we've been over it, but it is one of the positions, so really we shouldn't have to spend long on this. It ought to be mainly a review. It's position number 11, the deserted believer is not under bondage. So 1 Corinthians 7:15 teaches that the believer deserted by the unbeliever is not under bondage, and therefore free to marry. Let me ask you a question. Is the deserted believer under bondage? Does the text say they're not under bondage? Wait. You're right. Does the text say they're not under bondage? Yes. What about the last part of that? And therefore, free to marry. Does the text say that?
No.
Does the text discuss remarry? No. So, somebody can turn to 1 Corinthians 7:15 and say, if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or sister is not under bondage. True. But it's that therefore part. And therefore, free to marry. Okay. According to Matthew 5:32 and Matthew chapter 19, verse 9, the one put away by their mate is not free to remarry without committing adultery. If the unbelieving person leaves, can it be scripturally said they put away their mate? It's not a trick question.
Just making sure.
If the unbelieving one leaves, 1 Corinthians 7:15, can it be said they put away their mate?
Yes.
Yes. They divorced their mate, did they not?
Yes.
So does Matthew 5:32 and 19:9 apply?
Yes.
It does, doesn't it? Whoever divorces their mate except for fornication and marries another commits adultery. And then the last part of the verse, whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. So if the man says, I'm leaving, I'm out of here, I'm divorcing you, then do those two verses teach that when she remarries, it's adultery?
Yes.
Seems to me it does, unless I'm missing something. But, you see, point number two is, and we dealt with this in a previous discussion of a position that's held, you can see how these overlap. The argument that Matthew 5 and Matthew 19 do not apply is based on the false assumption they do not apply to marriages with unbelievers. You remember studying that? Matthew 5 and Matthew 19.
They were not Christians.
But they were covenant people. They were believers in God. We're talking about a pagan. Was he talking to pagans?
No.
And so remember, we studied the position that Matthew 5 and Matthew 19 cannot apply to 1 Corinthians 7:12 through 15. Remember that? Good. I'm glad somebody shook their head yes, so we don't have to go back and say that again. Yes, we did. But as you said, Sally, no, that's incorrect. What Jesus said in Matthew 5 and Matthew 19, does it apply to interracial marriages? Does it apply to interracial marriages? Yes. Did he specify?
No.
But did it include?
Yes.
Did it specifically mention people married to unbelievers?
No.
But did it include? Yes. That's right. So this is a wrong assumption that it does not apply to people married to unbelievers. And the argument is that He was not addressing people married to unbelievers, and he did not mention that, therefore it doesn't apply. That's the argument that's made. And to further support that argument, they go to verse 12 of 1 Corinthians 7. Look at 1 Corinthians 7:12. This is a tough question on a Wednesday night. How do they use 1 Corinthians 7:12 to prove that the Lord was not talking to people in mixed marriages?
It says,
not I, but not the Lord. So,
the rest I say.
Okay, to the rest I say, not the Lord. And so they said the Lord didn't talk about this. Remember that? That's right. But Paul didn't say what the Lord said did not apply to it. He did not specifically address it. And did Paul say to the people married to an unbeliever, did he say in verse 12 and 13 what he had said in verse 10 and 11?
Same thing, didn't he? Don't divorce. Okay. Verse 12 through 15. There are two basic rules of Bible study. You know them. The law of harmony and the law of context. And so the bondage of the context of verses 12 through 15 is to what? Live with. That's the bondage. They're not under bondage to live with if the unbelieving mate departs. But there is, as Linda pointed out, another kind of bond that Romans 7 talks about that you sustain even if you divorce your mate and marry another. You can still be bound to a previous mate by the law of God. And that bond in Romans 7 means what? Not free to marry. That's right. We are not going to number 12 right now. Yes, sir.
When you're reading about this position question, is there any attempt to explain Matthew 19 and Christ going back to the beginning, which would have been prior to any covenant people, in their view? I think the way they're viewing it.
Yes. I just read about it again. I went back and read that section in that book, but I'm not sure I can explain what he said about it. Yes, there is an effort. Yes, I remember what it was, because I thought this is very interesting. That particular man, James Bales, said, in the beginning was a law that did not continue to be a law because the patriarchs did not observe it. And they were approved by God. Men like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And the best I could tell, I may have missed something in his writing, is he wasn't sure when that ceased being a law, how long it was a law. So your question, well, why did Jesus go back to it in Matthew 19? I don't know the answer to that.
Neither does he, apparently.
I don't think he does either. Okay. Good question. All right. Let's go. We skipped number 7. On your class material, it'll be page 45, I think. So if you have the class material, go back to page 45. I didn't know if we'd have time to get to it, but we do. So I want to cover that in our class period tonight. And then Sunday morning, Lord willing, we'll pick up with number 12, unless we have time to start on it this evening. The divine prerogative. You'll note whose name I have at the end of this quote. Some of you may have heard Brother Patton preach. He was very capable, very knowledgeable. As far as I know, very good man. He and Brother Phillips, I believe it was, had a debate on this in Searching the Scriptures, religious magazine. And while I respect Brother Patton for his knowledge, in fact, he wrote a book about answering questions, all kind of Bible questions. I do not agree with him in what he believes on this particular point. So here's what he says. Here's the position as I've tried to state it based on his writing. The whosoever in Matthew 5:32a, whoever divorces his wife except for the cause of fornication, grants a divine prerogative to put away your mate if fornication has been committed against you.
You're familiar with Matthew 5:32. If not, you be sure to look at it, because it's based on this concept that God is giving someone the divine right or prerogative to put away their mate if their mate has committed fornication against them. Okay? Now, if your mate puts you away for some other reason, Brother Patton believes it is by human authority and not recognized by God. Therefore, you are still married in God's eyes. They may have divorced you, but God didn't approve it, so you're still married in God's eyes. Later then, if your mate commits fornication, you may now exercise your divine prerogative and put your mate away. So your mate says, I don't like you anymore, I'm leaving. Bye. 6 months later, 6 years later, they commit fornication. Say, I'm divorcing you for fornication. God gave me that right and you cannot take it away. That's the idea. Okay? In Matthew 5, and it applied to Matthew 19 as well, when it says, everyone, I've got whosoever, that's based on the older versions, is the whosoever or the everyone of Matthew 5:32a a married or a divorced person? Married person. A married person. Okay, so now we get into definition of terms, which we've discussed. When that person leaves, are you still married? So this is clearly a married person here. Now, if a person has been divorced for whatever reason, can they subsequently divorce their mate? No, there's no marriage in place. That's why this position has to have them married in some way. That is, in the eyes of God, in heaven. Or else there could be no divorce. Is there any divine prerogative given in Matthew 5 or 19 to a person who has already been put away to put away their mate? No, only to the married. So here's our terms. Remember, we spent a whole section on definitions. This is why it's so critical. What does married mean? What does divorce mean? All right, so this position argues that divorce by human authority does not dissolve the marriage in heaven. Therefore, the person put away by human authority may later put away their mate for fornication. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. Back to, I don't remember when we were going through the definitions of married, if we covered this or not. I know of couples who live in the same house, but they won't divorce because it's wrong in God's eyes. It's sin. They don't even like being around each other. Sleep in different bedrooms. To me, that's not a marriage. Am I wrong in that thinking? Could you say that they were basically divorced anyway? They're just sharing the same house?
Everybody hear Dawn's question?
Yes.
How would you answer that? Ma'am?
By the definition of divorce, they're still residing to each other together.
So you would say they're not divorced?
They're no longer living as a husband and wife, and they're no longer consummating that relationship, and no one's supposed to put that away before time, right?
So you would say they are divorced?
They are divorced. Living in, you just changed the relationship.
question, can you put someone away without leaving?
Well, y'all sure want to make this interesting, don't you? Is put away or leaving a matter of geography?
No.
No, it's not, is it? This couple that Dawn's talking about, do they still have a covenant to be husband and wife? Let me ask you this. If a couple has a covenant to be husband and wife, but they simply refuse to fulfill the sexual demands of that covenant, does that mean they're divorced?
No.
Sir?
They were never married.
They've already fulfilled it, but now they because of bitterness or ill will or whatever, they're just not going to do that. Does that mean they're divorced?
No.
So I would have a question about that, Dawn. I don't know the answer, as you can tell. But do they still have a covenant to be husband and wife, but just living in disobedience to God's will as to what that covenant entails? But as Dana's pointed out, it's not simply a matter of geography. I know of a couple. Here we go with these a couples, all right? And they're not the only ones where the man wanted to end the marriage. He had a right to. The woman was guilty of fornication. But he didn't want to put her on the street. So they lived in the same house. But he made it very clear, we're not husband and wife. Sir?
He likes her cooking.
This particular case, I don't even know that would qualify. But anyway. It was really an act of mercy that he did not put her out, is really what it amounted to. Now, since we can't answer that definitely, we ought to just abandon this position, shouldn't we?
No.
I don't know the answer to some of these questions. I do not know. But obviously, if a couple are living together under the pretense of being husband and wife, but not willing, sometimes people cannot because of their health or various other things, but just unwilling to fulfill the obligations of the relationship. And there's more than the sexual part of it. There's the companionship. So, I'm your husband and wife, but don't talk to me. Really? Is that part of the relationship? Sure it is. Sure it is. It's not just a piece of paper. And it's not just something you said 20 years ago. It's sharing life together. Let's suppose they're husband and wife, and they do participate in the sexual act, but otherwise they don't talk to one another, they don't talk about their lives, they can't even stand to talk to one another. Now are they husband and wife?
Yes, but they're in sin.
They're not?
I wouldn't call that a marriage.
Well, you don't, because you're defining marriage as something good, but the Bible doesn't. Does it? No. We got this tendency, and I know we want to hang on to it, that marriage has a kind of a glow around it. It's kind of like the word love. Can anything called love be bad? Oh, yes. Yes, it can. And something called marriage can be terrible. Yes, Ennis?
Didn't God say it was good when he put Adam and Eve together? Everything was good at first when God gave everything. But God made it all work right.
Is it good when he beats her? I don't know about there, but when he made it, it was good. But let's say a week later he beats her. Is it still good?
Was it good when she gave him the fruit?
Good question. Was it good when she gave him the fruit?
I didn't make the judgment. God's one made the judgment.
But when it was good, it was before all of that.
Yes, right.
It was in its purity. What we're describing is not that. This is a corruption, but that doesn't mean it's not still a marriage. When he made it, it was good. So when it gets bad, is it no longer a marriage? How about the woman married to the unbeliever in 1 Peter 3?
Yes.
Is that good?
Still married. Better or worse.
Right. That guy that's in 1 Peter 3:1, He's not a Christian and said, don't send a preacher over here. Is it a marriage?
Yes.
Marriage is a what? Relationship. That's what it is. Not necessarily a holy relationship. Not necessarily a good relationship. It's a relationship.
Okay, so in Dom's couple...
I told you I don't know.
I know. But okay. If it's related, they have some kind of a relationship, even though it's not fulfilled.
Yeah, that's why I say I don't know. You know, if they still have a covenant to be husband and wife and do everything else but the sexual part, you know, I would have difficulty calling them divorced, but I don't know.
Well, you can't, in this situation, if they decided to dissolve that covenant, so parents get a divorce, but they want to stay together for the kids, live in the same house, but they don't live as husband and wife, they just live as roommates.
That happens a lot. I say a lot. There's a lot of cases like that. There are cases where people realize, I don't have a right to be married to this person. Maybe they've been married for 40 years, but they say, okay, we cannot be married, but we can live in the same building. We can eat at the same table. Can you live in the same building and eat at the same table with somebody every day and not be married to them? Sure you can. You can have a housekeeper.
But that's not the tact I'm taking. I'm talking about they were married scripturally and decided that they no longer want to be.
I understand. I'm just saying that just because they live in the same building and eat at the same table doesn't mean they're married. But you're right. I don't know that I could. It looked like to me it'd be pretty difficult to live in the same building with somebody you've been married to for 30 years and loved and abstain from all the marital privileges. But maybe people can. I don't know. Now that we've answered all those questions, y'all ready to start on the next quarter? We can go on over to authority. Okay. Question 2A, does married equal bound? Not in Romans 7, does it? Bound to one man, married to another in Romans 7, right? According to 1 Corinthians 7, 10 and 11, the person who is divorced is what? What does the text say? Not a hard question. Look at the text. Unmarried. So, if you take 1 Corinthians 7, 10 and 11 and apply it down to verse 15, the unbelieving one leaves, where does that leave the believer? Well, how would you describe them? Unmarried. Unmarried. The other person left. That's right in the same context. But you got a problem. For example, in this defense of this, Brother Patton said, wait a minute. You say they're not married. But it says in 1 Corinthians 7, 11, that she's to be reconciled to her husband. How in the world can she not be married and have a husband? How can you have an unmarried husband? How can that be? He said that's a contradiction in terms. That's right. That's why we studied that. Husband and wife can refer to past, current, and future relationships. It does not argue a present marriage. We gave verses to illustrate that when we studied that lesson. Okay, so we didn't just make that pronounced, but without some foundation in the text.
So you see how definitions become critical here. So that's why we ask question B there and question C. Can an unmarried person have a husband? And that's the answer to that. Is a person who has been divorced still married in the eyes of God? Did I hear a yes? That's not my question. That's not his point. Is a person who is divorced still married in the eyes of God? No. The answer is no. That's critical to this idea. Otherwise, you couldn't put them away later. See? Okay, Matthew 5:32. Look at it. Last part of the verse. The put away woman. Whoever marries a divorced or a put away woman commits adultery. It is argued that the innocent put away person who has fornication committed against her is simply not in the verse. In other words, he says, whoever puts away his wife except for unchastity makes her commit adultery. That is, for any other reason. And so they say, the woman, the innocent woman, who did have fornication committed against her. Jesus says, in any other case. What about a case where the person's committed fornication? The argument is, that's not in the verse.
Yes, it is.
Now wait, Jesus said, whoever divorces his wife except for. So he's throwing that out. Whoever divorces a wife for any other reason commits adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman, that is, one divorced for any other reason, that's the argument. I'm not saying I agree with it. A woman divorced for any other reason. Fornication is not in it. They would agree with you. Put fornication in the picture. They say Jesus already threw that out. Except for, he threw that out. So, a woman who is divorced for fornication, they said, Jesus is not talking about that. You don't have to get into that here. All you got to do is answer the rest of my question here. Whether that is so or not, if she is put away, can she subsequently put away her mate for fornication?
No.
If she's put away, how is she going to put away?
Re-put him away?
Somebody she's not married to. So you just there's no way, once you're divorced, to divorce. You got to get back to the assumption you're still married in some way. Of course, the idea of married in heaven or married in God's eyes. So it's argued that human action by human authority and in violation of the law of God cannot negate that which is divinely authorized. By that which is divinely authorized is meant the divine prerogative for one who has already been put away by human authority to put away one's guilty mate. Does Matthew 5:32 or Matthew 19:9 give divine authorization for a put away person to put away their mate for fornication? No. It gives the authority for a what kind of person to put away their mate for fornication? Married person. There's no divine prerogative given to a divorced person to put away their mate for fornication. See, that's the assumption. But there's not even, it's not even there. Okay? All right. I've got 5 minutes. All I'm going to do is introduce this next position. It's on page 51 of your class material. Number 12, the procedures not specified. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to study this. If you see something wrong in what I've presented, I want you to be prepared to present it in class. I'm open. Here's where I stand on it, the class material right now. But I keep studying this. I would like to believe this. I would like to believe the desertion position. But I just can't make the text work. I'd like to believe this. Let me ask you this. If somebody said, look, looks like to me God is mean to make all these laws, what's your response?
Who made you the judge?
Who made you the judge? Okay.
God knows best.
God knows best. He's doing this for a reason.
God's law for the benefit of the people.
God's law is for the benefit of the people. That's a good answer. But it sure does seem kind of cruel and rough to make these laws, doesn't he? Yes, Lil? It is his law, ma'am.
God is love, and he does everything and says everything because he is love, and he is kind, his loving kindness.
I agree with you, and if I'm the other person, I say, I know you say that, but this looks like tough stuff to me. You talk about this loving God.
It's only tough if you don't want to follow his will, his way. That makes it tough.
Suppose a child comes to you and they say, you know, my parents are the meanest things you've ever seen. Why? Why? Because they gave me a spanking yesterday. I mean, they gave me a bad one. That's your parent. Yeah. You say, well, that's for your good. I'm telling you, it hurt. My parents are mean. They just spanked me. What might you say? Besides the fact it's good for you. What?
You consider your actions.
All right. Good thing.
Spanking may hurt now for a little bit, but hell hurts a whole lot worse for eternity.
That's true.
Why did
they
spank? What
did you do?
They created
him.
Let me use another illustration. I'm going to try to get the answer I want one way or the other.
You're going to run out of color.
You open your newspaper, you turn on your television, there's an officer that shot a guy. Man, these officers have no heart. They're cruel. He shot that guy who was breaking in or whatever. I mean, these police officers have no heart. They're cruel. True? I can see I'm not getting anywhere. Look, this parent that spanked their kids, is that all they ever did for that kid? Did mother not have that child and stay up with them at night when they were sick and feed them when they were hungry and take care of them when they were cold? And did daddy not work day and night to provide for them? And did they not care for them day in and day out? This kid is 12 years old and they're giving him 12 years of care, and the kid points to one incident that they deserved, as you said. Said, look how mean my parents are. Is that fair? Is that a fair representation of my... They're just mad. You ought to have seen how mad they were. And they didn't care if they hurt me. That's my parents. Is that a fair characterization of your parents? Here's a police officer that has to shoot a man. But you know, yesterday he was helping somebody that had trouble. He was defending the law. He was doing things for the good of society. What about all of that? This God, who made that baby you hold in your arms? Who made that beautiful sky you saw today? Who gave you the capacity to see it? To hear the birds sing? This God, who made marriage, who gave you the capacity, if you want to, not to serve Him, to think and to reason. This God, who's so mean and cruel,
What did he do when we messed up and fell in condemnation and sin? He sent his only son to save you and me. No, there's some of these laws I don't understand, but don't talk to me about this God not being a God of love and mercy and grace. That is not a fair characterization of God. So let's be fair. You wouldn't want people to judge you that way. I wouldn't want people to judge me that way. You make mistakes. I make mistakes. I make mistakes in teaching. I make mistakes in preaching. I don't want somebody to judge my whole character and work by mistakes. God makes no mistakes. But I don't want God to be judged by rules that we don't understand. But I know they're for our good. I've got a lot bigger picture of this God. I cannot deny His love and His grace. Okay, time's up. We'll pick up with this position, the Lord willing, in our class Sunday morning.